Good morning. This meeting is recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, August 27th, 2024. Dr. Bustillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
I'd like to call the August 27th, 2024 State Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Dr. King? Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton, we have a visual, but he's muted. No, maybe I heard something.
Ms. Champions, I can hear, I can see your lips moving, but I can't hear you. So I'm going to log off and log back on.
Okay. Can everybody else hear me at this time?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Dr. Hike?
Here.
Okay. Ms. Crawley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Here.
Dr. Sinish?
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. I am the board's executive director. Mr. Barton, are you back?
I'm back and connected and can hear you. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Let the record show that Dr. Kelly King is absent. And now if Dr. Hike, you'll read the mission statement for us, please.
Sure. Mission of the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses and certifies qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants, and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees and certificate holders.
Great, thank you. I'd like to welcome everyone that's here, those who are participating, and especially the students and faculty from A.T. Still University that'll be joining us today. Our first order of business is to approve the regular session minutes from July 23rd, 2024. Any additions or corrections?
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Any discussion?
Who was that, Dr. Hike, that did the second?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and second to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session meeting minutes from the July 23rd, 2024 board meeting. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Abstain.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, on to agenda item 4, applications for licensure and certification. Review, consideration, and possible action for physical therapist assistant applicants requesting ADA accommodations. This is for Madeline Henderson. Is Madeline on the call?
I am.
Great, thank you. Would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you.
Dr. Bustillo, the board received a memorandum with the application and request for the ADA accommodations for Madeline Henderson. She's requesting additional time and a separate room. The matter's for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson, can you describe the problem that you have and how it affects your everyday life?
Yeah. So I have a diagnosis of mild dyslexia is what it comes down to. In everyday life, it forces me to be more organized. So I knew I was going to have to go into taking my PEAT exam without any accommodation. So I started studying back in my fourth semester. So that's about May of this year. And that also has been reflected in my clinical experience because I don't want any of my lacking to affect my patients. So I go in about 15 to 20 minutes earlier, make sure I understand first half of the day's notes. And then I do the same thing at lunch to make sure I know what everybody's coming in with, kind of my game plan, and see what I'm going to do from there, just so my issues don't ever affect my patient.
So you did have some type of additional accommodations on your clinicals, or you did them yourself?
Clinicals I did myself. I had the separate testing room and the extra time during my time at my school, Pima Medical Institute.
Ms. Henderson, outside the educational realm, outside of test taking, have you ever had any accommodations to assist you in any everyday tasks, going to the grocery store, driving, anything like that, that you require assistance or receive accommodations for?
No. I mean, I'm friendly with autocorrect if I need to write an email, but other than that, no.
You don't need anyone to assist you driving or going to the store or doing anything like that?
No.
Is there anything about, your condition that affects your daily life functions outside of the educational realm?
Not severely where I notice it consistently. It is just, I'll misspell a word and I have to, hey Siri, how do you spell that? It's not, it doesn't like affect my safety or anyone else's safety. It's just quite wrapped around test taking.
Did you receive an undergraduate degree?
I did.
And did you have any, you didn't have your diagnosis at that time, correct?
I did not. I went to Pima Community College and they were very lax. They saw that I was putting in a lot of effort to my classes. So they allowed me an isolated room, no extra time during that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Barton. In your initial statement, I thought I heard you say that you took at least one exam with no accommodations. Is that correct?
Yes, I took my PEDE exam that qualifies me to test early for the MPTE without accommodations.
Okay. And why did you wind up taking that exam with no accommodations?
I didn't know how this board meeting was going to go, and I wanted to be prepared for the worst case scenario.
Okay. And it sounded from your initial statement like you took some actions on your own to prepare for that exam. Did those help?
They did help.
Those actions you took?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, did those actions you took help?
They helped. They were quite tedious and demanding, but they did help.
Okay. And you were able to obviously take that test with no accommodations?
Correct.
Okay. And when was that? Was that after your diagnosis?
Yes. So the test I took was actually last Friday.
Okay, thank you.
In terms of just a couple of questions, in terms of your evaluation from the psychologist and reading through that, it seems like they're suggesting that decoding a lot of text in terms of reading through and making sure that you have the point from the question, the STEM, as they call it on the exam, is super difficult for you. And so I'm wondering, in terms of you're asking for a separate room and additional time, when you took when you had your accommodations previously, were you in a separate room?
I was.
And how does that help you?
It lets me, so I'm not like full on speaking every question out, but I can murmur questions to myself now without affecting other test takers in the room. So I make sure I piece together the right information.
So the concern is when you're talking that you would disturb others. Is that what you're saying then in terms of talking it out helps you?
Correct. Yeah. And I don't endorse cheating either. And it feels like cheating.
I see. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Ms. Henderson, have you ever received additional time for an exam? It sounded like you had had a separate room at Pima. I didn't hear you say that you had additional time. Is that correct?
That is correct. With the separate room, I got the additional time as well.
You did get additional time?
Correct. Both happened.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have a motion?
This is Mr. Greer. I would move to deny the request for accommodations. I don't see a disability that impairs a major life function. And for that reason, I move to deny it.
This is Mr. Barton. I would second that. I think it looks like that there is there's probably access to the exam here and access to a fair shake at the exam, and so I would move that we deny.
Just for clarification, you're seconding.
Okay. Yes.
Any further discussion? Okay, I feel like we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to deny the requests for ADA accommodations for Madeline Henderson of additional time and a separate room. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck to you on the exam, Ms. Henderson. I hope it goes very well.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Okay, we're going to move on to the consent agenda, and this is for application approval and test taking, as well as termination of board orders. And the people that it involves is Abel Sanchez, Selena Frias-Moffitt, Joshua Eckeson Bromigan, Kelly Foster Blakesy, Catherine Cottrell, and Mark Morelli. Does anyone have anyone they'd like to pull off the consent agenda? Not hearing any, I move that we approve the consent agenda as printed.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of items listed on the agenda in 5A, 5B, and 5C. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. If any of the people are still on the call, you're welcome to stay in the meeting, but you don't need to at this point. Thank you for being here. Okay. It is not 9 o'clock yet. So I'd like to reorder the agenda. if we can, and look at 11A. This is case number 2368, Paul Kempton, PT.
And I do know that Mr. Kempton's attorney, Teresa Sanzio, had intended to be here, and I did think I saw her. There she is. Good morning. I don't know if Mr. Kempton is also on the call or not.
Judy, I do not believe he will be able to attend this morning.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Madam President, board members, this matter was tabled during the board's July 25th, 2024 meeting and is now placed before you for your review. On May 21st, 2024, the board met in open session regarding complaint 2368 against Paul Kempton, PT. Following its review and deliberation, the board voted to remand the matter to a formal hearing. In an attempt to settle this matter, Mr. Kempton, through his attorney, Ms. Sanzio, requested an informal settlement conference. On July 1st, 2024, Ms. Sanzio and Mr. Kempton met with board staff, and following that meeting, a consent agreement was drafted. Mr. Kempton subsequently signed the consent agreement and is now presented for your review. The board may vote to approve the signed consent agreement, or it can direct staff to modify the consent agreement and present it again to Mr. Kempton through Ms. Sanzio for his review and signature. The board may also vote to proceed to a formal hearing. So the matter is provided for your review. The documents were in your folder.
Is there any discussion on the consent agreement items? Okay, so I'll move that we accept the signed consent agreement for Mr. Paul Kempton.
Second.
Mr. Greer, second.
Any discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Mr. Kempton's signed consent agreement. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. Let's look at item 11B if we're able to. Stephanie Whitmer. Case 2372.
So this matter was agendized in light of the agenda posting deadlines and in anticipation of potentially receiving documentation for board review. At this time, a signed consent agreement has not yet been received, so the board is asked to table this matter to a future meeting. Ms. Stark is Ms. Whitmer's attorney and is present, so I don't know if you have any questions for her, but the point of this is to request that this be tabled.
I move that we table this to a future meeting.
So, Mr. Harris, should we table this or should we move this to a formal hearing?
Well, I think you can probably do both. I don't know, Sarah, if you have an update for us or if you want to chat after the meeting.
Yeah, so I did reach out to Ms. Whitmer. She's traveling for work after we talked the other day, Mark. And so I think that we can probably get an answer and speak after the meeting pretty quickly in the next few days. So, I mean, if the board feels comfortable going ahead and setting it, that's fine and let us continue to negotiate. But, you know, again, I think, Mark, we can probably continue to talk and hopefully get something resolved.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, members of the board, perhaps the motion could be to, you know, continue the matter for further discussions and if not resolved, move to formal hearing. Because, Sarah, my understanding is that she's declined the informal invitation.
Correct. Yeah. That's correct.
Okay. That way we'll either bring back a signed consent agreement for your review or we'll schedule this for an administrative hearing.
Yeah.
Can we modify that motion, Mr. Greer? Or
yeah, Attorney Green.
Okay. I'll second Mr. Greer's motion then.
Thank you.
And that motion was to continue the matter for further negotiation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Further settlement discussions, and if not resolved, remand to formal hearing.
Any further discussion? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Harris, for the clarification. So it's been moved and seconded to continue case 2372, Stephanie Whitmer, for further settlement discussions. And if it's not resolved, the matter will be remanded to a formal hearing. Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. All right. Let's see if we're able to do 10A as well. PT Compact Matters regarding Anne-Marie Garrick. I thought I saw her on the call.
Yes, I believe so. Good morning. Yeah, I'm here.
Great. Thank you.
All right, so Anna Marie Garrick renewed her AZPT compact privilege on June 24th, 2024 without taking the AZ law exam. She was notified and given a 30-day grace period to come into compliance. She did take the AZ law exam on July 6th, but did not pass. She was informed that she could either try to take the exam again or alternatively could terminate her compact privilege. However, either option needed to be within the grace period. Ms. Garrick's grace period expired July 26th without passing the AZ law exam and without terminating her compact privilege. We did receive confirmation that her AZ compact privilege was voluntarily surrendered on August 20th, 2024. The last date that she worked as a PT in Arizona was July 19th, and her grace period ended July 26th, so she did not work in Arizona past the end of the grace period. And this matter is for your review.
Are you willing to answer any questions from the board, Ms. Garrick?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I guess my big question is like, what was your understanding about renewing your PT compact license without taking the jurisprudence exam?
My understanding, I'm a travel therapist.
Up until now, Indiana was not part of the compact legislation. So this was my first compact license that I got through that legislation. So my understanding, I was operating under the impression of this worked like the rest of my licenses where I take it and once the jurisprudence exam is passed, you only pass it when you have to renew the license. Also, I was under the impression initially, and I did clarify this with Judy via email when I renewed the compact privileges without it, that was just a misunderstanding, which is when I then signed up to take the test. When I realized that I wouldn't pass, my contract was done and I was going to be within the 30-day grace period. So the timeline of that worked out. And then I was unexpectedly out of the country. So I did not have any Wi-Fi for about 2 weeks. And in the craziness of leaving the state, moving out ending the contract and then being out of the country for a couple weeks, that was just the one thing on my to-do list that kind of slipped through the cracks, which I remedied as, like, I think I called, was it Liz Snynish, the investigator? I called her the day I got back in the country and terminated the privileges as soon as I could.
Great, thank you.
Ms. Garrick, was this, you said it was an unexpected trip. I don't need to get too personal. Was this a vacation or was this some other trip?
It was personal with family. I mean, do you need more clarification? I had to go see my sister, so.
That's fine.
So at this point, you don't have any intention of working in Arizona?
No, ma'am. I'm actually entering the armed services, so I'll be active duty military in the coming months.
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
I'm going to move that we offer Ms. Garrick an advisory letter advising her of the rules of compact privilege licenses in Arizona.
Second.
Dr. Bastillo, do you mean provide her with an educational letter?
That would be correct. Yes, thank you.
Was that Mr. Leone?
Yes.
That seconded it? Thank you.
So if I'm correct, given the fact that Ms. Garrick has terminated her compact privilege, the true motion is to take no action at this time, but to provide her with an educational letter regarding regarding compliance with the compact privilege requirements?
Yes.
Thank you. And Mr. Leone, as the second, you're okay with that motion?
Yes, I'm good with that.
Any further discussion?
Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded to take no action against Anna Marie Garrick and to provide Ms. Garrick with an educational letter regarding her obligations to comply with compact requirements should she seek compact privileges again in Arizona. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
All right.
Ms. Garrick, we'll be in touch with you.
All right. Sorry. I'm sorry. I said something right over you.
We'll be in touch with you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here.
Of course.
So, Dr. Bastillo, I do need to step off for a few minutes. I will be back very shortly.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Barton exited the meeting at 8:59.
We have less than a minute here, so don't want to start. I have 9 o'clock.
I do too.
Okay, so we're able to begin our informal hearing item, agenda item number 7. And I do have a script that we need to read.
Madam Chair, before you read it, I'm just wondering do we know if Mr. Holguin is present?
Ms.
Holguin.
I'm sorry, Ms. Thank you.
Ms. Holguin, if you're present and speaking, you're muted. So please try to unmute. If you're struggling with mute, enter something in the chat so we would at least know whether you're here.
I think it's important to know that she, according to Ms. Chepia, she did not respond in writing to the informal hearing request. The last I heard from her was the 16th of August, and I don't know, Judy, if you've heard from her since then.
No, that was a question about renewal, and Mindy forwarded it to me. I replied to her, and we've not received any communication after that.
And she has not renewed her.
She has not renewed. Okay.
So Madam Chair, yes. And the reason why I asked was because of that background, and since she's not present, there's probably no reason to read the script. I could just ask the board to consider entertaining a motion to remand this to formal hearing.
This is Mr. Greer. I would move that we remand this to formal hearing.
Second.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think
it's been moved and seconded to remand case 2405, Georgia Holguin PTA, to formal hearing. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton, excuse me, is absent at this point. Dr. Hyk?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so that'll move us on to agenda item number 9 with initial reviews. And I do have a script for that. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 4 initial reviews and 2 preliminary reviews for the board to consider. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 322045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I'm the board's chairperson. I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
John Hyk, professional member.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not to take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary actions such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. So our first case is case 2402, Heather Lascaris, PT.
All right, so Dr. Lascaris is represented by Cody Hall, and I believe both she and Mr. Hall are on the call. The complainant, KM, had previously indicated she was not going to be able to attend, but I will just double check. KM, if you're on the call, will you let us know, please? Pretty sure she won't be in attendance today. Okay. So this complaint was filed by patient KM, who alleged that the treatment provided by Dr. Lascaris, PT, DPT, worsened her elbow condition to the point that she has pain daily and will need surgery to correct the problem. Potential violations identified in the investigative report for you to consider are ARS 32-20-44-4, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-20-44-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R4-24-304, adequate patient records. ARS 32-20-44-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, and as it relates to R4-24-303-A5, for each patient, the physical therapist shall ensure that services reported for billing, whether billed directly to the patient or through a third party, are accurate and consistent with information in the patient's physical therapy record. And ARS 32-20-42, use of titles, restrictions, violation, classification, and as it relates to R4-24-302, use of titles, A. As required under ARS 32-2042, a licensed physical therapist shall use the designation PT immediately following the licensee's name or signature to denote licensure. Dr. Lascaris and her attorney received a copy of the investigative report and submitted a supplemental response, which was included as Exhibit 7. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Dr. Lascaris, would you or your attorney like to make an opening comments?
Good morning. I do not have an opening comment.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I'll turn my camera off for that.
Okay.
And Dr. Bustillo, this is Cody Hall. I don't have any opening comments either. We'll reserve any maybe closing comments for after the questions. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Anyone have any questions?
I'll start. I think my first question is about the subjective, the patient described in initial evaluation that she felt something was popping in her elbow. In terms of differential diagnosis,
what possibilities were you thinking would cause something to be popping in the elbow?
Let me review what I discussed with Liz Sinish, because I believe that question was asked originally.
Yep.
Okay, so as stated to Liz Sinish on the day we did the investigative, where she did the first meeting, stated that I did not have a working diagnosis or differential diagnosis regarding the popping that the patient subjectively reported.
Sweet. If I understand you correct, then you weren't sure that at that point in time for the initial evaluation.
That is correct. The statement was subjective.
Okay. And then as I read through the notes, it wasn't until visits 8 that you actually heard the pop.
Let me refer to my note for that. Give me just a second. I apologize.
That's all right. It's a lot of things to go through.
Okay, let's see here. Yes, on visit 8, she came into the clinic and said, she said that her elbow had become achy at rest. She's not having a lot of pain with work duties. But then she did a push-up in the clinic, which I put in the assessment. She's popping in pain over the medial condyle with push-ups. We looked at her x-rays and saw no significant findings that were to, you know, intimate that something else was wrong.
So at that point, what did you think was causing the popping? So you had a subjective and then you had an objective aspect of you actually heard it popping when she did push-up.
So at that time, because I do not have ultrasound or soft tissue imaging capabilities, I did not know what the popping was caused from.
And then just to clarify that, if you were thinking it was a nerve, when you did your initial evaluation, You didn't have light touch changes. You had a negative Tinel sign.
That is correct.
And so in terms of differential diagnosis, in your thoughts on that, then you would want to refer that patient at that point after visit 8.
Is that your recommendation?
That's my question.
So I did not refer the patient after visit 8. She came back for another visit.
Okay. Next question. Informed consent. When you were going through the interview with Liz, you had said that verbally you receive an informed consent.
That is correct. I explained to the patient what we're going to do that day. And they say, yes, no, okay.
You know, are you aware that that should be documented?
I am aware of that now, sir, and I have corrected my notes to reflect so.
Okay. Thank you. And then there was also some question asked from Liz Anish about visits 3 and 4 and 6 and 7, that both of these notes were identical in writing and actually in terms of the two notes, the same error was made in visit 3 to 4 and from visit 6 to 7.
My response to Liz Sinish on that was that the same treatment was provided. For consistency, things did not change. I read over the note and filed it as the same.
And you feel that that's okay?
Looking back, I do not think so.
Okay. And then the last question is about the title in terms of, and maybe this is part of electronic documentation. I'll allow you to explain that, but RPT and LPT in terms of the designations, it says in 32.20.42 in terms of the use of the titles that those two things shouldn't be used. Is that something in your electronic documentation that automatically puts the L in front of PT?
It was, and that has been corrected clinic-wide and company-wide.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your answers.
Thank you.
Dr. Liscaris, this is Dr. Bustillo. My question is on the second visit. I know you weren't there, but the PTA provided an ASTIM treatment to the flexor tendons. Can you, was that part of your original treatment plan?
Let me look at the note real quick and let me look at the flow sheet. Give me just a second. Okay, so if we go ahead, if we refer to the original initial evaluation, we're recommending physical therapy to include modalities for application of eSTIM to modulate pain. So for the PTA to choose that, it would have been appropriate. And then let me look at her note. Oh, you're talking about instrument assisted. I'm sorry.
Not yes.
I misunderstand. Let's look here. So I do not see it here on the list. We use instrument assisted. I personally don't scrape. I use cupping with patients. So the scraping was provided by the PTA on that day. So per her note, she had ISTIM to all areas with good presentation of blood circulation.
Yeah, I saw that, but would the PTA had to have gotten that approved by physical therapist that was supervising her or him on that day?
So that would have been off-site supervision. The PTA was working in the clinic without me.
Did she ask if she could do it?
She did not.
Is that a concern for you?
It is now.
All right. So then a few visits into the treatment, you felt like things weren't exactly going exactly the way that you wanted them to, a little bit slower than normal progress, and you had another PT in the clinic look at her, or you asked some questions about where you may want to go with this. And you began to add some cervical and scapular things. Did you assess the cervical spine or the scapula, shoulder?
The scapula has been addressed from day one, that she presented with protraction of that scapula in poor position and space. On the cervical spine, let's see. That visit. So we look at visit six, that patient presents reduced active passive range of motion of right cervical rotation when compared of right cervical rotation when compared to right, sorry, that should have been left, and soft tissue restrictions of muscles listed above. So it was assessed on visit six.
So you assessed gross range of motion, but did you assess joint mobility or muscle strength?
We looked at external rotation of the shoulder that day and looked at her range of motion. And let's see here. And if I'm looking at range of motion on the table, then I would be looking at joint glides as well. And so it says that I did cervical mobilizations. So at that time, I would have been looking at joint mobilization.
Right, but you didn't document restrictions or pain or levels that were involved.
That is true.
Can you tell me what you've learned from this experience?
I have learned that I need to take a little more time, or actually a lot more time, documenting my thinking process and what I do. I believe that my treatment was reasonable, that I caused no harm to KM, that I went in with you know, good thinking, good plan. I wanted to give her better body mechanics to do her job, and I should have documented what I was thinking and all the things that were going on in my brain so that you would understand what happened in this case.
So have you been doing that?
I'm sorry?
Have you been doing that since this
happened? I have. I've had meetings with my clinic director and my PTAs, and we have changed the way we set up our flow sheets, the way we document. I have gotten very strict on my PTAs about if they want to add something, they have to ask me. I've changed a lot of things.
Have you taken a documentation class?
I have not since I left college.
Any other questions?
Ms. Lascaris, what kind of changes have you made to your documentation since all of this came to your attention?
So I have been utilizing the place on the flow sheet to designate therapeutic exercise, therapeutic activity, or neuro-re-ed. Then with description in the electronic record as to why those things are chosen. I have also added an addendum to my flow sheet I handwrite that texts and aids assist with exercises and modalities and complete those portions of the flow sheet. I have added documentation that states that the patient consents to participation in therapy activities and manual therapy if that is provided. I have taken the time to check with my PTAs and make them understand that the manual therapy, things that I choose are chosen for a reason. I understand they cannot do manipulations, so they can come and get me for those. But if I choose a certain joint mobilization or manual therapy, it is for a specific reason, and I want that to be repeated in their plan of care.
And all of that is being documented as far as your discussions with them each treatment session now?
Yes, we have really jumped up on our documentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thoughts on what you'd like to see, Dr. Hike?
Do you want to give Mr. Hall a chance to do a closing statement?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm sorry, Mr. Greer. Mr. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Greer. I appreciate that. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen of the board, just a quick couple of comments. I think the issue basically, certainly based upon the focus of the questions, has been documentation. And as we admitted in our supplemental response, if the board feels the documentation course is appropriate, she would certainly be willing to undertake a documentation course. But as far as the quality of the care concerns, it doesn't appear that the investigation has uncovered any evidence that PT Lascaris actually caused an injury to the patient. So we would ask that if there is any action taken by the board, it is limited to documentation and not any finding that the patient, excuse me, that the PT has actually caused any potential harm to the patient. And that's all I would offer at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bustillo, I would move towards a disciplinary letter myself. I think in terms of documentation, the other thing I would want to also see is that maybe an extremity course. The elbow can be difficult to, in terms of understanding it. And in the interview with Liz, she said that she had a couple of other patients that she was treating currently for an elbow condition. And so I think that I would like to see that as well, because it concerns me that the idea of a patient coming in with a subjective complaint of something popping, and that the patient's occupation doesn't allow her to rest that area. And so I think that that would be important as well. So I would move towards a disciplinary letter. That's my opinion. Documentation would be one, and then the other would be a course on extremity.
Okay.
I think that I'm good with that.
Okay. I think, truthfully, we can handle this in a non-disciplinary manner with continuing education, with the documentation. And I'm not opposed to upper extremity course by any means. I do feel that she didn't overtreat this patient. I feel like she followed a stepwise progression and asked for help when she felt like she needed it. But never hurts to review, so I am not opposed to that either. Do you have an hour recommendation?
Dr. Bustillo, I don't want to interrupt, but this is one of those clinical cases that I don't understand because I'm not a physical therapist. But this one, it seemed like she didn't really know what she was doing. And from the questions that Dr. Hike asked, it seemed like there was a lot of guesswork here. Is that typical?
They can
be. That's a concern to me. If you're providing treatment without a diagnosis, that seems putting the cart before the horse. Am I wrong?
I feel like her initial eval led her in the direction of a tendonitis, and that's what she was treating. And it really wasn't until, and they had a plain x-ray that didn't initially show a bone spur, that it took an MRI to actually find. And so I don't feel that's on her. That was imaging that was missed. I think that's where the upper extremity course can be helpful in that. But I feel like based on her initial evaluation, she treated what she assessed.
Is there any truth to the orthopedic surgeon's notes, or at least his guess or proposed hypothesis, that the treatment provided by Ms. Lascaris actually harmed the patient?
Her treatment could not have possibly caused the bone spur. That was there. That was ongoing. It had been developing for some time before the injury occurred. That's how bone spurs work. And then occasionally then they become symptomatic, at least in my experience. And so the treatment may have irritated some of the tissue near the bone spur, friction massage, things like that. The ASTEM was obviously a concern that I had. We also have it documented that the patient was able to do 7 hours worth of yard work, in a day without, having it flare up too badly. So, I struggle with a few of the exercises having caused the injury.
Thank you.
In her defense, I think in the evaluation, she really didn't have a nerve response. And so, you know, if she's able to do, as Dr. Basile noted, 7 hours of work of yard work, and plus her job, it's definitely, what the therapist was doing was not, causing the problem. Irritating, yes. And, obviously that's addressed. Does that help?
I'm in agreement with you guys. I don't see any of the treatment that was provided as something that did any harm to the patient necessarily, but I do think that a course specific to the elbow treatment would probably be, you know, good for her to take. Definitely think that documentation and billing and coding would be something that would be beneficial for her to take as well, but more along the non-disciplinary method rather than a disciplinary method.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Giovanni, with the billing and coding as well. There were some issues with that, and that's a positive for sure.
Yeah.
And Dr. Pastillo, to your point about hours, I would think 6 hours for the elbow.
Okay. You want it elbow specific or upper extremity specific?
Upper extremity, because I think, you know, upper limb tension might have told her, some more useful information as well. Yep, upper extremity.
So we're looking at a non-disciplinary order of 6 hours of documentation, 3 hours of billing and coding, and 6 hours of an orthopedic upper extremity course.
Yep.
Madam Chair, did you want to put a time frame in there?
6 months.
Thank you.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Are you ready, Judy?
I am.
Okay.
So in case 2402, Heather Lascaris PT, it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. Continuing education shall be completed in the areas of orthopedic upper extremity for a minimum of 6 hours, documentation for a minimum of 6 hours, and billing and coding for a minimum of 3 hours.
Judy, can I just make one clarification? I think this is 2403.
Is it?
Oh, okay. Thank you. It's 2 on the agenda.
Yeah, it should be 2403.
Yes. Yes, that's a typo. You're correct.
Okay.
Okay. So yes, the case on the agenda has a case number typo. It is case 2403, Heather Lascaris, not 2402 as reflected on the agenda. Okay. Was there anything else about the motion that was overlooked?
No.
Okay. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. The board will be in touch, Dr. Lascaris, on future steps.
Thank you for your time.
Do you need to stop and start the recording?
I think that would be a lovely idea. Thank you for remembering. It is 9:34. We will stop the recording and immediately restart it. Bear with me just a moment, please.